The Process, a podcast about creativity and experimental music. In the world of experimental music, outcomes and accolades for creators can be uncertain and at times seem far and few between. Therefore, creators and practitioners of experimental music must embrace the one thing they will always have complete control over, the process. This podcast aims to understand this creative process by listening to new works and discussing them with their creators. Each episode focuses on one creator and their music. Understanding how and why they create can inform aspiring creatives and help audiences better understand and navigate experimental music. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and I'll be your host as we explore the world of experimental music, creativity, and the human need to find purpose in their world and lives. This is The Process. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Process. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and in the words of The Temptations, or if you're from a more 90s generation, in the words of TLC, I ain't too proud to beg. And what I'm begging for is not what they were talking about in those songs, but rather reviews, comments. So if you're in your preferred podcasting app, please feel free to leave a comment or review. Today's episode, we're going to be talking to Eric Salazar and his new album on the Sheva Collection and on Helidon Classical, Sally. And the story of Sally began for me when I was on my way to work, as I sometimes do, not during the summer, but definitely during the school year do. As I'm on my way to work, I take the Green Line in, that's a T line here in Boston, and I have these great isolation headphones that I purchased so that I can sit and spend that time. It's about a 30-minute T ride, and I spend that time listening to music often, sometimes my own stuff, but a lot of times for potential projects or even mixes that I've done working for clients. I know that sounds a little bit, you know, reckless because it's the T. If you know anything about the T, it's very loud. So these isolation headphones, they're in-ears and they do a great job of sort of isolating the sound. Anyways, so I got this track. I got an email from Eric who, you know, I worked on his Centaur release, Soul Search. I've also worked on a bunch of other projects with him, and he sent me the track that we're going to hear today, Watch Me, Grandpa, or Mírame, Abuelo. And when I first heard it, I hadn't heard any of the other songs that were going to be released on the album, but from just this song, the song he sent me, I was like, I have to work on this. This is really cool stuff. He's going into different territory here. It's very minimalistic. It's right up my alley. I think I can do a great job kind of expanding on this idea, or, you know, sort of helping him bring it into the realm of a mix. And so that's how the story began for me. And today's episode's kind of interesting because we don't really talk about the recording process much, or much of our interaction as far as me mixing and mastering the album, but we talk more about the meaning and what it meant, what the album meant to Eric. And I think it's just interesting, you know, sometimes when we work on a project, whether, you know, we're performers and we're performing somebody else's music, or if, you know, you're like me, you're doing the technical part of it, you know, sometimes maybe we don't stop and just ask, you know, so what's this all about? Probably the good ones out there that are listening, the people that are good at what they do, probably consider that or probably ask those questions. But this is a great opportunity. Let's go ahead and listen to this track that sort of caught my ear and said, I need to work on this album. This is Watch Me, Grandpa, or Mírame, Abuelo, on the album Sally by Eric Salazar, on the Sheva Collection and distributed by Helidon Classical. ¶¶
this album, Sally, is at its core an exploration of identity. In my family, I have these deep, respectful relationships with the men in my family, my brother, my dad, and my grandpa. And our last name is Salazar. And everyone has the nickname Sal, first three letters of our last name, except me. My nickname was always Sally instead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And my grandpa passed away in 2020, and he was a major part of my life, my development. And so that has caused a lot of reflection time for me. And one of the things that I latched onto was, why is my nickname different? You know, what am I, what separates me from everyone else having the nickname of Sal? And so what I did was I wanted to explore identity through improvisation. So the album is a series of improvisations. I recorded an improvisation every day for a month. And then from all of that material came with this album.
When you were recording these, was there like a time length? Did you say like, okay, I'm going to work for 30 minutes on this improvisation? Is it a 10-minute thing? Were there any rules?
Some of them, I gave myself an outline, if you will, a framework to improvise with. But in terms of the durations of each track, I just played until it felt done.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the regiment was for 30 days straight, you're going to do like 30 improvs in 30 days. It's just like it sounds like a health thing or something, you know, like a health kick, like I'm going to eat broccoli every day for 30 days. But so you've done this. So you have now basically 30 short pieces, right? Or 30 ideas? 30?
Yeah. I would say, I did it in February. So it was shorter. It was about, with travel. Yeah. With travel time included, about 25 days of recording. It is 25 sketches, I would say. But that developed, you know, some of them I did and, you know, then started critiquing and ended up not wanting to, include them in the album. But it's 25 musical ideas.
Yeah. So you said some of them that you didn't want to use on the album, some you didn't think had, you know, what was your selection process for being like, okay, I should work on this more. I should take this further and get it to sort of an album level.
Yeah. You know, it was really interesting. And it was spontaneously decided in the moment, pretty much purely based off of the feeling of, am I, with this improvisation, am I actually exploring identity here? Because some of them were, just fine musically, but it wasn't a discovery of myself. Right. It was more so like a replication of previous improvisations that I've done.
Yeah, so it's and in a way, it's so you're like talking about your like personal identity, but then you're also talking about your like musical identity. So did you literally listen to one of these improvs and be like, oh, that's not me, or this is me, or what was it? That was that the selection process? Like when I see myself in the song, then I move forward, or?
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, yeah, and just based on that feeling of like, I feel like this is representing me. Like, I feel like this music is this aspect of my personality. You know, like, this piece reflects my introspective, thoughtful side of my personality. This piece represents my, you know, active, lifelong learner aspect of my personality. And yeah, some of them were just fine musically, but not necessarily representative of who I was.
So you were able to do these improvisations. So you've got a lot of material now. You're able to look at it and say, okay, these are the things that either represent me or I want to represent me musically. So then what's the process after that? Did you just start recording things? So are you recording these and were you using Reaper? Is that the software that you're using?
Yeah. So I just in terms of some of the technical aspects, I was using a Scarlett 18i8, mm-hmm. and I have a pickup mic that I use with my clarinet. It can be transferred from clarinet to bass clarinet. Mm-hmm. And that was plugged in directly to the audio interface. And then, yes, recording these in Reaper. So, when they felt like they were worth exploring more deeply, I would then at times add in electroacoustic elements to sort of fill out the sound world. Or I would, just do multiple takes until it got refined to that polished point that I wanted it at.
Yeah. Did any of the original improvisations make it onto the final album? Like the original recording from day 16 or whatever it is, did any of those make it to, did any of those improvs just, are they in the final album that we would hear?
Yeah, the 10 miniature improv games for bass clarinet, that was just done one take straight through. And some of the tracks we, did a little bit of processing on them, but most of those are just kind of raw. They're just what I played with not a whole lot of fussing added to them.
So in this process then of taking these improvisations, what were the challenges with this? What were the challenges of taking things that you have improvised in the month of February to then, put them on an album or get them to a state where they can be a track that would appear on an album?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one challenge with it is that with improvisations and with my vision for this of being like, here's a glimpse into my identity reflected through my musical identity, the challenge is that anytime you're doing something kind of raw in that way, raw improvisations, you have to live with flaws that you hear in your playing. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, finding that line of like, okay, I like this one musically, but it's just not, the recording itself is not clean enough for me. Yeah. And so finding that line of like, what is communicating what I want, even though it has flaws that I can detect.
Right. And when you say flaws, are these like performance flaws or are they like just recording like it clipped or something like that or both or?
Performance flaws is mainly what I'm talking about. Yeah, like, a squeak here or there that, I really upsets me, but might not be as big of a deal to the listener if they're listening to it, because it's an improvisation as opposed to like a record every measure four times and then splice it all together situation.
Right. Yeah.
when my grandpa passed away, you know, it hit me really hard. He was such a huge part of my life, and was also my cultural connector to my Mexican heritage. He was born in Mexico, Mexico City, and with him gone, it's like, oh, now I need to step up and own up and forge these connections, because Grandpa isn't around to, you know, be that connector for me. So that's why it's partially in English and partially in Spanish. Mira mi abuelo. But one of my fondest memories of Grandpa is that he was awesome, owned several businesses over the course of his life, and he retired early with Grandma and lived on a houseboat on a lake. And
fantastic.
That was where they lived, and they chilled and like drove boats around, and it was awesome. Every summer we would go down there and you know, spend time on the houseboat and swim and boat, ride jet skis. And when I was really, really little, like most kids, I just wanted attention. And so I would jump off the back of the houseboat and get in, swim around, climb up the ladder, get out, and jump off again over and over again. Yeah. And I would say, watch me, Grandpa. And I would just jump off in there. And he would just sit in his chair, and he would watch me every single time. He was so patient. And so that is why, you know, when I went to do this one, I was thinking of him and thinking about how formative my relationship with him has been. And, you know, I would say I'm also a very patient person, and I learned that from my grandpa. And so the reason it is in this minimalist style is because it's representing me jumping into that water over and over and over again, and Grandpa watching me patiently.
So yeah, and that's what I was wondering. Is it really you know, minimalism? Is it you're using that kind of aesthetic to kind of mimic sort of this repetitive motion? So let's talk about. So it's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful idea. It's a beautiful concept. But let's talk a little bit about some of the tools. So is this a piece you perform live?
So it is possible to perform live. But when I do, it's by using a loop pedal as opposed to just the athletic feat of playing through it the entire time. So I use a multiple loop pedal to loop these different cells together. And then in live performance, somewhat randomly pick the cell, the measure that I want to be performing. Right. And I basically weave in and out on just that cell after I've set up the looping mechanism with all the remainder of the measures.
So really the version we hear on the album is kind of the like ideal, or, you know, just a very fixed version, where in performance it could vary quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that the track is like the master version. Yeah. It's the palace, the beautiful palace version of it. And then in live performance, it's more spontaneous and more, it has more variation in it.
Yeah. Well, even just as you're composing, you know, especially when you're dealing with repetition, one of the questions I always have, you know, definitely as somebody who uses a lot of repetition, you know, how did you know, even when you were just constructing the album versus when you're performing, how did you know when it's time to move on or to sort of add something else to the process? Because, you know, the process you were describing of like jumping off the boat and coming back on and just like, watch me, right? That probably was exactly the same every time, right? But probably, you know, through your grandfather's interpretation, it was probably interesting and different each time. So how do you keep that kind of interest, or how did you know when it's time to move on to a new cell or move to another cell?
Yeah. So I think for me, it is really based on when I get bored.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah. And I think that's my, like, I have a meter
yeah.
when with any minimalism piece, you know, even yeah. one that's not something yeah. I compose that, yeah. that I'm performing. I have a meter of, you know, knowing when I'm bored. That's yeah. how, that's my approach when I'm recording minimalism. Right. It's mm-hmm. like, when am I like, okay,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
enough. Like, that's
time to move on. Time to move on. Yeah. Yeah.
In performance though,
yeah.
I would say that I like half my brain is fixed on the audience and half my brain is reading the energy of the audience. Cause mm-hmm. in performance, the audience is telling me when to layer in, you know, mm-hmm. the next phase or go on to the next measure, with any minimalism piece, whether it's mine or someone else's.
Yeah. So it's kind of like reading the room, and because you're there to perform, you're there to entertain them. So when it's, you know, when the crowd kind of leans back a little bit or starts to get, you know, fidget a little bit, you know, even if it's people, you know, standing in a club or something like that, it's not a traditional like classical setting, you can, you know, you can kind of get a vibe of when it's time to move on.
Yeah.
So is it really minimalism? Is it a process piece? Is it, or does it really just come back to the impetus of the piece, which was to kind of recreate this sort of childhood sort of obsession with diving, I guess, or jumping in the water?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I guess I would call it programmatic minimalism. Yeah. So there is a very clear story that I am trying to communicate, mm-hmm. which I don't think that's necessarily always the case with minimalism. I think mm-hmm. the aesthetic is here's the space and experience it the way that resonates yeah. with you.
Yeah.
I think that's the typical approach to minimalism. But for me, yeah, it is, I want to create a space for people to connect with their own childhood memory. That's kind of the purpose of sharing it. But yes, it certainly tells that story of jumping in again and again, and this time I'll jump in backwards, and this right. time I'll do a somersault as I'm jumping in.
Right.
It's reflecting that. So yeah, I would say programmatic minimalism. I had the wonderful opportunity to participate in a residency. It's called Escape to Create, and it's put on by the Escape to Create Foundation, which is based in Seaside, Florida. So basically, the residency is, it's multidisciplinary, you know, the artists of all disciplines, but the residency is, if you don't know a lot about Seaside, Florida, it is an area, it's a very wealthy area with lots of resort homes. Mm-hmm. And so people who live there will have, it's like their vacation home.
Yeah.
However, there are times of the year where they're not there. They're not at that vacation home. They're at their main home. And so the houses are just vacant. And so the Escape to Create Foundation wanted to have more arts in that town. And they realized, a lot of these houses aren't being used. So they set up partnerships with artists. And so the residency is they let you stay at one of these resort homes, which it was a mansion to me. So you stay there for a month. You are a 2-minute walk away from the beach and the ocean. And they pretty much just leave you alone. They're like, hey, do your art. Here's this wonderful house with a stipend, weekly stipends, so you can get groceries and you know, a service that comes around and gets your trash and everything. So yeah, the Escape to Create residency was what allowed me to do this. It gave me a month of travel. Like, I traveled there and I was there for a month away from my normal activities, and that's what gave me the time to do it.
Did you still find yourself, though, too, like, keeping a very similar schedule, like, you know, like up at 9 or up at 8 or up at 7? And did you still work your kind of 9-to-5 day? Or not that you, you know, in all your performing and all the creative things you do, is it really 9-to-5? But did you find yourself still, like, kind of using your sort of same schedule? Or was it just really just a free, open time?
Well, I am someone who does like a routine, and so, but I didn't do a routine here at this residency. I intentionally was like, I'm getting away from my normal, so I might as well, even for myself, I might as well do something different. So, like, I didn't have an alarm. I just woke up when I woke up. I didn't have calendar events of, like, it's recording time. It was fully organic. So, like, some days I would wake up, walk on the beach, and then record. Some days I would wake up and be like, whoa, I gotta record right now. So it was just so flexible and organic.
Well, Eric, this has been fantastic talking with you, hearing about these songs. I've had time working on these songs with you. And I think maybe all this time I didn't always ask, like, what you know, even the story about your grandfather, I didn't quite know that's how deep some of these songs really went. So thanks for sharing that with us and sharing the music. But before I let you go, is where can we go to find out more about not only you, the clarinet guy, but also about the new release and maybe other projects that you're working on?
Yeah, so my best places are on social media and my website. My social media handles are at the Clarinet Guy. So you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram, and that's where I post, you know, news and about events and stuff. And my website is ericsalazarclarinet.com, and that's in addition to this album when it's released, and previous albums. You can find my discography on one of the pages on my website. Yeah, and then as well, if you listen on streaming, whatever streaming you listen on, YouTube Music, Apple Music, Spotify, I'm on there as Eric Salazar, and give me a follow, and that way you'll know when all of my things are gonna get released. I also have, if you're in Indiana, there is a project I do every year called the Micro Composition Project, where my ensemble, Forward Motion, we're a new music group. We premiere new works by Indiana composers and also record them for the composers. So that's happening in August. And then the last thing that's pretty accessible, or at least might be accessible, is if you know the Sphinx organization, they're a wonderful organization, leaders in diversity and equity in classical music. They have a conference every year called Sphinx Connect, and I will be one of the presenters at Sphinx Connect in January of 2024.
Thanks to Eric for coming on the podcast and sharing his time and music with us. As always, if you like this episode, please like, subscribe, or leave a comment on your preferred podcasting app. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and this has been the process.